Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Patrick, I think those t-shirts are selling well because we did not get a turn. We did not get a big angle. We just got FTR beating MJF and Adam Cole. MJF beside himself afterwards. Cole consoling him, giving him a pep talk, saying, "We lost, you didn't lose," even though MJF took the pin. And then MJF thought of turning because, you know, he's MJF. And Cole sensed it with his back turned. He's like, I knew it. Just do what you got to do. And MJF couldn't do it. And he dropped the belt. Fans said, hug it out. And they hugged. They got a good thing going with this. Probably we'll see in a couple days when the ratings come out how good. Did this draw a big rating for AEW Collision? But I don't know if this was the original finish, Patrick. I don't know. But my sense is it wasn't, in that they thought they've got a pretty good thing going and they want to extend it beyond the original plans. What is your reaction to the finish tonight and that in particular?
Yeah, Wade, I'm with you. I think we're on the same page here as far as you're really being attentive to where this was going specifically with this match to see the outcome, because I didn't know where they were going to take this. But the fact that they're seemingly sticking with this, not only as a team, but being more definitive, I would say, with MJF turning face here, it's pretty, maybe not surprising, but it's certainly telling us, what the outcome has been, just because if the fans love these two guys together. So much so, we actually saw and heard some boos from FTR once their music hits, which we have not heard that in a while. So I think both from a revenue perspective, like you said, with t-shirt sales and just the live crowds like eating this up, I had a few nitpicks here and there with this whole angle and this match, not necessarily the match, but just kind of the outcome. But other than that, I mean, I'm pretty definitive direction here moving forward.
Yeah. The crowd, as you noted, was a lot of people were booing FTR, a lot more people cheering MJF and Cole. People are into double clothesline, but there was a dueling chant after the bell, double clothesline FTR, double clothesline FTR. So kind of like with CM Punk, people are taking sides and they're being vocal. There's probably some people chanting both, and you people are cheaters. Pick a side. But it was fun. It was a great atmosphere. I don't have a big complaint right now about extending this. I mean, I think they addressed what everybody was thinking, which is, does Cole know better?
Yes, good point.
Cole was there to the end, fighting with MJF. They got along. I don't think there were hints of dissension or misunderstanding, anything like that, where someone overreacted. And then MJF hates losing, understandable. The context was MJF shoved Cole out of the Shatter Machine and sort of took one, sort of didn't. I'm not quite sure what was intended there. That kind of fell apart, but maybe it was supposed to, but not in that way. I don't know. But then right after that, he set up a heat seeker, and then it turned into a Dax roll up on MJF for the win. So MJF's blaming himself for the loss. Cole's being a good partner, a good friend. The announcers, I thought it was interesting as a little aside here. Nigel bringing it up and Ian Riccaboni not pushing back. In fact, adding to it, saying, hey, Cole is as much of a snake as MJF if you look at his history. And they started listing people that Cole had turned against, kind of acknowledging what some people have been speculating for a couple of weeks, which is Cole's the one who's going to turn on MJF. And so that got introduced into the mix. Cole never hinted at that himself that I noticed, but MJF after the match did. He's so frustrated with losing, picks up the belt. Cole almost was in a mode of, Tommy Dreamer, thank you, may I have another, in that famous CCW moment. Just go and do what you got to do. And it was a test. And he was willing to take, take a shot to the back of the head with the belt if it turned out that he was the fool that a lot of people said he was, to trust MJF. He felt, that he deserved to be hit from behind if he did trust MJF or shouldn't have trusted him. And in the end, because they acknowledged it, they kind of addressed that Cole knew there was a risk, knew what people were saying, didn't think it was crazy, but felt a genuine friendship with MJF developing, and he was willing to take that chance. And when MJF, push came to shove, MJF hardwired, turn on people, hit people from behind, and he couldn't do it because even MJF is warming up or has already warmed up to this idea of having a friend, something he hasn't had anyone play, hasn't had a friend to play video games with before. Now he does. You know, there's value in that. So, Patrick, your thoughts on anything there?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of the nitpicks I actually do have with this, but I think you explained it away pretty well. One of them is, you know, does Cole look silly for just kind of accepting or almost accepting the fact that he was about to get blindsided from behind? I think your explanation is probably enough for me and many others to be okay with that moment. But
yeah,
that did ring in my ear a little bit, at least in my mind, a little bit, just like, you know, him being like, okay, maybe I'm about to get nailed here and I deserve it. So I can kind of be on the fence there a little bit. The other nitpick I'll just throw out, but again, it's really minor because I actually really like this whole angle, not just tonight, but leading to where we've got to tonight and beyond, hopefully, is, you know, should Cole have taken the loss? Would that have meant more and made more sense for MJF to get a little bit angry at him and then made more sense for him to randomly just pick up the belt and want to smash him from behind? So that, again, not that this really changes things, but those were some of the things, you know, booking from my chair watching TV that went through my mind at the moment. But again, this, one of the other things that we didn't really talk about was the hug. That moment, I mean, there's not a lot of those moments in AEW, really, and this is what we're coming up on show number 200 for Dynamite. Give or take, what, four plus years since the company was founded. And that was a moment. I mean, you don't really, you know, this company doesn't speak about like that. You know, that's not in their nomenclature, their marketing, their marketing speak, as, you know, WWE does more so. But this certainly was a moment, I think, in time that they should and could go back to and just kind of and it was not necessarily wrestling related. Most of their highlights are obviously in-ring moments, but this was something that was non-wrestling related. That was just more on the emotional side because they built a really solid story here.
Yeah. I wish Trent Barretta and Chuck Taylor hadn't ruined it, you know, by just doing it in sort of this cornball way all this time. Cause
right,
it did sort of feel like now we need Excalibur, you know, annoyingly yelling, you got to get the people what they want. And so in a sense, it, for me, I took a little bit away from it because the best friends thing is so just played out. But that said, it was cool. The fans wanted it, and I'm sure they planned it. But to have the fans chanting for it, I shouldn't say I'm sure they planned it. I suspect they planned a hug. It was all set up for that, and I think the fans sensed it. They led the fans exactly where they wanted to be. The fans, you know, picked up on it, and then they were able to do the spot with the fans calling it. Yeah,
I was going to just add one more nitpick, and this is really obviously, but the callers want to bash me for this. Do you think MJF should have been the one to go for the hug because Cole was clearly the one to go towards MJF for that? I'm a very, very minor issue here, but
is that something
that you think just could have added to the moment a little bit?
So to me, I think Cole having his back turned and MJF not hitting him with the belt, even though he was picking up on the fact that the fans were warning him of it and he could sense it. I think Cole's just like, he turned around and it was the moment where he realized this friendship is real because MJF could have hit him.
Yep.
And so for Cole to initiate it kind of works for me because, you know, with MJF, you're sort of suspicious, but Cole had this moment where he was willing to take the hit for being naive and stupid and gullible. And when it didn't happen, I think he just, you know, we're to believe he got overwhelmed with emotions going, you are my friend, hug me.
Mm-hmm.
And MJF was willing to do it. So I was okay with that. As for who took the fall, I mean, I think it could have worked either way. Having MJF lose as your world champion is kind of ballsy.
Yeah.
But it put Cole in the position, because I'm trying to imagine, I haven't played this out in my head, but, you know, I was wondering the same thing after the pinfall, like, why didn't Cole do the job? Well, one, you know, Cole is a challenger. It's going to be a challenger to MJF's title, whenever they go there. And I don't know if you want Cole losing as the challenger and looking like, yeah, it's no big deal if Cole loses, because I don't think Cole is as strong as MJF. And the story was MJF sacrificed himself for Cole, so it makes sense that MJF would be the one who paid the price for something he did that is out of character for him. You know, it was a big thing for the MJF character to protect his partner and sacrifice himself. And so, in a sense, this could end up being something where MJF goes, I had a moment of weakness and it cost me. You know, I got pinned and I don't like getting pinned. So if that is where they're going, then it does make sense for that to happen. If Cole loses, yes, I mean, you can play it the other way and say, okay, MJF, Cole took the loss. MJF doesn't like losing. MJF consoles Cole, but does he really forgive him for losing? And because MJF wanted both belts. He wanted world champ and tag belt. And so then you could have had the moment where MJF says, it's okay, and consoles Cole when he's about to hit Cole because he's truly upset that Cole lost and, quote, let him down. That's when he drops the belt. So, I mean, it seems like they could have done that too, honestly. I mean, I think that would have worked. I don't think I'd have been critical if they took that route.
Yeah, agreed. I think I agree with you. And like I said, I think I'm kind of just trying to look through this at different ways that this could unfold. And maybe that's the beauty of it, that they're able to tell a story so well and build to this moment so well that, you know, there's these minor, maybe from my perspective, at least minor tidbits or nitpicks, but they're really not. It's been a solid build to this point. And I think you actually alluded to this, just going back to something you said earlier. It would be interesting. I wouldn't close the door on the idea of Cole breaking down the heel MJF so much so where he is the one to turn on him. He's already gotten his shot. Maybe there's something that he can, you know, weasel his way in. And did you say was Ian Riccaboni was the one who mentioned it? Or,
yeah. Well, Nigel just said Cole's no more trustworthy than MJF historically, and Ian listed some people he turned on.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. I thought that too, actually. I don't remember hearing that actual commentary today, but that is something that crossed my mind. I mean, he could easily be doing the same and be an interesting turn. It would be an interesting turn of events down the road just to see, you know, if they could make this kind of super babyface MJF and all of a sudden turn Cole back heel. That would be kind of a cool way to do it.
I agree. Well, we're certainly going to talk more about this. We got phone calls, we got emails, we have on-site correspondence, and we'll delve into what was a fascinating night. Overall, Patrick, I thought this was a thumbs-up show. I am unexpectedly not resenting professional wrestling, adding a fourth live major show that I have to cover as part of my job. Because, I mean, you know, weekends are nice and, you know, time freedom and recharging and all that. And if this show wasn't good, you know, people are like, are you going to do a live show? Are you going to do the post show after Collision? I'm like, well, we're going to try it. We're going to see if it's a relevant show. And, you know, we're doing. And I find myself looking forward to Saturday night watching Collision and covering it. And I don't make it to sound like I'm complaining about my job. I'm not. But, you know, there comes a point where even something that's fun to do, there can be too much of it and it displaces other things you value in a balanced life. I am not in that position right now where I'm resenting it. If Collision ever gets crappy, you know, I reserve the right to change my mind, but I'm literally finishing up SmackDown on Friday night and thinking, oh, my weekend. Oh, that's right. I work Saturday nights now. And I'm like, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to Collision. You know, like it's been fun. So, and this was, you know, another episode where I was like, this is like a good wrestling show and it doesn't feel redundant with Dynamite, which is so essential to me, you know, to find the show relevant. It's just, it's not more of the same. It does feel different enough with the talent, the announcing, you know, even the pacing somewhat. There's just enough differences where it feels like a fresh, worthwhile show. Are you with me on that?
100%. I've been actually very excited to get on with you. And I know schedules didn't align on my end, but I'm happy to be here. I think this is episode number 7 for Collision, if I'm not mistaken. But to your point, it's kind of been such a nice thing to watch. You're right, on a Saturday. It's this, you know, we've gotten pretty accustomed to how Tony Khan books and promotes his shows. And this is a Tony Khan on a different level in a way. And I don't know if Tonight breathed as much as some other shows to date. So I don't know if Tonight was the best example of what's different about Collision. Although I still, you know, there's some differences. I think a big one is the openers. I love the throwbacks to kind of like the Saturday Night Main Event intros, which is great. And then just the fact that we have a brand new or different announced team is so, so good. I really do like Excalibur, but seeing this same product through the lens and, you know, hearing the voices of different individuals has been such a positive for me personally. And I think a lot of people, it doesn't feel rushed. Whether it's Ian Riccoboni or Kevin Kelly, they can tell the story without rushing through things or kind of passing things over at times that I think gets to Excalibur, or he conveys things a little bit too quickly. And I just feel that's part of the rushed kind of just the vibe that Dynamite brings. But Collision, another thing, I'm just thinking what else is different about it? Well, I do think they've done a really good job with video packages, which actually I think Dynamite has learned a lesson from, because last week's Dynamite or this past week's Dynamite seemed to have a lot of video packages in it too. And I think they're just telling stories more effectively that way. And last but not least is I think they're giving more time to their main events. Maybe this is, again, not the best example because it was a 20-minute main event, which we often see on Dynamite. But the first six or so episodes seemingly at least, 30 minutes plus. So anyway, they're just doing things similarly but different, and that difference is maybe minor, but I think goes a long way.
Yeah, well put. All right, well, let's pause and quickly formally introduce the show and give out the phone number and email, and then we'll get to what is the first of what might be more than one on-site correspondent tonight, and then also some phone calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, July 29th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, chronicling professional wrestling for the past 35-plus years, and overseeing PWTorch.com, writing news stories, editorials, and live TV and pay-per-view coverage on that website, along with a great supporting crew of contributors. So I hope you're checking out our main website, PWTorch.com, every day. I've begun putting up 10 and 15 and 20 years ago house show results and TV reports from our archives, which has been really fun. I do it one because, we want extra hits, and it's kind of fun for, people. It might draw people to the site. I do it because it's just fun to read through, like Sean Radkins and Greg Parks and the different people's reports over the years who have contributed to the Torch. Greg and Sean have been with us for so long, to just go back and look at what was happening 10, 15, 20 years ago at house shows or in reviewing SmackDown and Raw and Impact. So if you haven't checked that out yet, you can go to the website. There's usually a flashback article somewhere on the main page, and then you can also go to the Torch Flashback section in our menu if you just want to dive in and go through the time machine. We just put up the debut of the Wyatt family on SmackDown in a 10 years ago flashback on pwtorch.com, and then we went back 20 years, and it was just fascinating seeing what's going on. John Cena and Orlando Jordan on SmackDown 20 years ago this week. So check that out if you haven't yet. And I am also the host of various podcasts, including this one and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. It's not a post-show live call-in format, just a more traditional podcast format with our flagship every week, some classic interviews and more. So search Wade Keller in your podcast app if you haven't yet, and hit subscribe to both this, the Red Logo Show, the post shows, and also the Blue Logo Show, our regular podcast. And while you're at it, search PW Torch and subscribe to the charcoal-colored VIP free sample feed, which if you use Apple Podcasts, the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone. Within there, you can use your Apple account to upgrade to our full slate of VIP podcasts, including versions of this show, the Wade Keller Podcast, and the PW Torch Daily Cast with the ads and plugs removed. So you can do that right within your Apple account. It's as frictionless and easy to become a VIP member as it's ever been. And while you are looking at the search results for PW Torch, subscribe to the free PW Torch Daily Cast. That includes a different show every day of the week with a different format, including the PW Torch 90s Passcast. And one of the hosts of that show is with me today, the first time we've done a post show together in over a year, according to our Skype timestamp. Patrick, it has been great talking to you again just so far, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the show. Patrick Moynihan, welcome to the co-host chair.
Thank you so much, Wade. You're a very persistent and patient man for waiting for my return here. So I appreciate coming back on.
Absolutely. Well, Wednesdays don't work for everybody, but
yeah,
Saturdays
right.
Is better. And so it's great to get you back on. You and Alex McDonald do a show every week. Tell people about that show. And then we'll get to, after that, we'll get right to our on-site correspondent.
We do a show every week. Yes, it is called the 90s Past Cast. It drops every Friday, as you mentioned, on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. Alex McDonald and I look back 30 years ago around this week in pro wrestling using the current issue at that time of the PW Torch. So, for example, we actually just completed our 80th episode already, just dropped yesterday as we sit here now. And that was our WCW Beach Blast 93 review. So that was the reviews episodes are always fun. We go back and watch the pay-per-views or the clashes, whatever bigger event that is covered in the Torch that specific week, and we go through it. So not only do we go through the events that come up in the Torch, but, you know, obviously the news. And, Wade, you're really the third man in the booth because we're reading your words every yeah. week. And I know you probably listen here and there, but don't fear. We do get along pretty well with you. I mean, we do agree most times. Yeah. I think early on in the 92 era, we were stumped by you ranking one of the Beverly's top 10 in wrestling at the time. But again, well, it's in the moment, it's different. It's different.
Patrick, it's all 2020 hindsight. All 2020 hindsight.
Absolutely.
Wayne Bloom. Wayne Bloom showed promise. I tell you. I don't just because he became a Beverly brother and didn't have his grid and pan out. He was like the best thing in the AWA for a while.
Well, I will say this: we do our best to keep our minds in the moment too, because you're right. Yeah. It is easy to trail off, and that was one of the things Alex and I would discuss early on to make sure we know what's coming, we know what happens, but we want to try to be in this case in July of 1993. So that's what you know. We do our best to do that. So totally understandable.
Yeah, well, thank you, you know, for not being too hard on me, because, you know, there will be, if you do this for a few more years at least, there'll be one or two other instances where I was wrong on something. And just, you know, it's okay to point it out those two or three times.
Oh, ago. Sure.
Yeah, you have my permission. Don't be too hard on me. But, yeah, when you notice I was wrong about predicting a future star or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is fun. I don't have an example right now, but there are some fun news reports that pop up here and there that, you know, are totally new to Alex and I. So it's just fun reading these nuggets that come and go, you know, seemingly overnight.
Well, you're going through such a – I don't want to spend too much time with our callers. But you are going through such a – like this like downtime of transition in pro wrestling 20 years ago – 30 years ago, excuse me.
Yep.
And you're about to enter when things – well, it'll be a little while. But, yeah, things really start heating up. But to start when you did at where pro wrestling was in such a different place, I just think it's like – It would be cheating to just start at the first Nitro. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You know, like being able to go through this and seeing what's going on in the early 90s, the doldrums of the early 90s in terms of pro wrestling, it was a down period, but it is what spawned so many things that came over the next 10 years. Yeah. It was the foundation that the mid to late 90s rebelled against in ECW, Stone Cold, NWO, the live Nitro format. So anyway. Check it out, everybody. It's free. Search PW Torch, and it drops. That drops once a week, but there's a different show every day of the week on the live cast lineup. Or even better yet, upgrade to VIP. You can get ad-free versions of the shows and have custom feeds for each of our VIP shows and each of the daily casts by going VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Get you full details on all the options. You can sign up with Patreon, with your Apple account, credit card, debit card, or PayPal. Different features, different prices. Check it out, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Okay, so our phone number, if you want to join us here on our live stream, Follow Me Collision, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. You can also just call and listen in. A lot of you do that. It's easier than streaming for you. So that is fine, too. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's get to Kevin, our on-site correspondent, the first of perhaps a couple. Kevin, thank you for calling. Thank you for holding as we reminisced. Welcome. How was Collision tonight?
Good evening, Wade. How are you today? Thank you for having me.
Good, yes. Thank you for taking time to talk to us. Was it a thumbs up experience for you in the building? It seemed like a blast from afar.
So wait, I have to be honest with you. I called back when we had WWE because I'm a big WWE fan. My AEW background, when it first kicked off, I was all into it. past year, the only AEW coverage I get is from your Dynamite post show, your Collision post show, and your flagship. So
yeah,
I'm not as knowledgeable about AEW as I am with WWE, so I just want to kind of get that out of the way, because basically the only information I get now is from basically from you.
Yeah, well, that's a feature, not a flaw, in the sense that, and I wouldn't want everyone like that, but like, it's cool to hear your perspective with that in mind, that you were willing to be on board, they didn't hold on to you, and now you attended a show, and you're not the typical person who's been counting down the days to AEW coming to their town and watching every week and all of that. I mean, you obviously follow through this show, and I thank you for that. But I think it's really cool to get your perspective given that context, so I'm glad you provided it. So what did you think? What do you think? How many you've been to a lot of WWE shows over the years, right?
Yes, and this was actually my first AEW show. And,
yeah,
like, my buddy had an extra ticket, so I was like, you know, it's in my town. You know, I'm a wrestling fan. Why not? And, like, the first thing I noticed is just the presentation. Like, you know, going to WWE, it's like watching a video game. And then coming here, it's more, like, raw. And there just wasn't a lot of the fireworks and the LED boards, the ring posts with the LED. So, like, just the presentation. But the biggest thing that I kept telling my friend is I just didn't feel like there was any stars. Like, there was really nobody I was really excited to see. And, you know, I mean, I'm biased because I love Roman Reigns, Seth. But, like, those guys to me are, like, superstars. I know that term kind of gets bandied around, like, capital S superstars. But, like, when they come to town, it's like, wow, Roman Reigns is here. Seth Rollins is here. AEW Collision was here. And, I mean, I love Andrade, El Idolo, or Andrade Almas from what I remember. But, and that was a great match with Buddy Murphy. But I've seen them wrestle so many times on WWE TV. And, like, CM Punk came out, and, yeah, the people pop, but it just, like, the biggest thing I noticed was, like, there was just no stars. And they were running down the graphics for Dynamite 200, and I say to my friend, like, who on those graphics is going to make you tune in on Wednesday to watch this? So, like, those were my two biggest takeaways from the show, was just, like, WWE, it's like, wow, this is, like, visually, like, stimulating. It's awesome. And then just, like, the lack of, like, star power that I noticed today. It just – I mean, MJF came out, and
well,
so I was kind of excited to see him, I'm not going to lie. But, like, the rest of them, it was – I don't know. It's just different. It's just different.
There's no question about it. AEW is promoting – it's like, hard to not sound kind of trite or cliche, but they're promoting professional wrestling. And more of an ensemble, more of an experience. It's more of an intensity in the ring, bang, bang, modern style, international wrestlers. But I would argue a weakness of AEW, and we can just pinpoint Kenny Omega. I'll just grab a name. Like, he's not a bigger star today than he was after the first Dynamite aired. He's been a disappointment in terms of amplifying his popularity and defining his character. Hangman Page is about where he started. Chris Jericho, you know, he's a star, but this isn't Dynamite. He wasn't on Collision. So my criticism of AEW is that there's not a lot of people over the years, and there's some, you know, Darby Allin, for instance, for sure. Maybe Ricky Starks is about to become one of them. Certainly MJF. Some of the wrestlers have grown to be, in the eyes of AEW fans, legit stars. But from a mainstream crossover, bring your family experience, the top shelf, almost like they kind of the difference between the big casino in Vegas having their featured show that's on the billboard outside versus one of the smaller casinos. You know, the big magician with a, you know, $30 million set, and then the smaller magician who's just kind of on a stage that a stand-up comedian might be on doing a smaller stale show. Both have their merit. I've been to both of those types of shows in Vegas. I enjoy them both, but one is bigger budget. And WWE definitely has a bigger budget five, and they clearly and definitively are masters at creating the perception that their wrestlers are stars and featuring people who, frankly, have that kind of charisma and star power. AEW's built around other things. And it's for some people, I'll go back to the phrase, it's a feature, not a flaw. They want just wrestlers who are wrestlers and not people who are propped up with LED boards and in superlatives and corporate speak. That's not to demean WWE. That's just saying that's how some fans look at what WWE is, a little too slick. Patrick, what do you think about Kevin's framing of AEW as you and Alex, I wouldn't call it a gimmick. It's true. Alex is a big WWE guy. You're a big AEW guy, almost to an extreme. You know, like, it's not like you lean one way. It's like you're all AEW, and Alex is pure WWE. So you you talk to Alex every week. You deal with Alex. Now Kevin must sound familiar. What do you have to say to what Kevin had to say?
Yeah, I totally get it. I think I get it a lot more than I used to. I'm 100% AEW, and Alex, like you said, is 100% WWE, and the only time I think they really cross is when we talk to each other. So I totally get it. Now, from that perspective, I think how you described what AEW fans are looking for, Wade, that really describes me to a T. I'm not really looking for that, you know, big polished, big kind of marketed, more, and I'm not actually in marketing, but the marketed approach that WWE takes to its brand is just not something that I'm looking for. So, and I get it. I'm more patient, I think, than I used to be as far as seeing and knowing that there's a difference in fandom and kind of what the interest is. Kevin, I'm actually interested in, you know, what one of the, you know, things you said as far as not seeing any stars tonight. Is there anyone, that aside, you gravitated toward that you thought was, whether you knew them or not going in, that you thought was, and I know you mentioned Andrade, but anyone else coming to mind? Like, Darby is a big star on the AEW side, so I'm
or
curious.
Ricky Starks?
Yep, him as well.
Yeah.
Just curious.
Yeah, I would say Ricky Starks. And when he came out, I even said to my buddy, like, how long till this guy's in WWE? Because when he came out, I was just like, man, this guy's cool, and he's just like a WWE superstar, in my opinion. I was like, I was just, his promo was great, because like when I called you about the Raw, I was telling you how I'm more into the sports entertainment, and I thought Ricky Starks just grabbed my attention from his entrance to his mannerisms on the turnbuckle to his promo. Like, I thought he outshined CM Punk, and CM Punk has been known as a great talker, and I actually might tune in to watch that title match, even though I don't think Ricky Starks is going to win. I actually might watch it just to see how the Ricky Starks story continues, because he was, you know, one of the guys that I was like, oh, you know, and I've heard of him before. Like, I used to watch it, but then it just kind of lost my interest. And then, like I mentioned earlier, MJF, I mean, who hasn't heard of him? And he's another one that I can't wait till he comes, you know, to the WWE, to the WWE world.
It's like fans of the Lakers and the Clippers and the Knicks and the Celtics, where they're just like, yeah, that flyover country might have drafted a star, but when his rookie deal's up, we're going to sign him. There's a little bit of that, you know, with WWE fans going, yeah, if anyone gets red hot in AEW, we know they'll end up over here. And you might be right, by the way, about both MJF and Ricky Starks. I mean, that I'm not saying it's inevitable, but you certainly picked out two people who I think are more likely on that path than just about anybody else in AEW for all kinds of reasons. So you're not wrong, and there are people out there who watch AEW with the idea being, look at what they did for Cody. You know, I mean, Cody is a better, more polished version. All his strengths are there, but they mitigated some of his weaknesses on promos, and they're just promoting him so well. So I think Starks would really benefit from being in WWE, but I'm also looking forward to seeing him get more TV time and refine the act that has real star potential for AEW. I thought it was, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, Patrick, the segment. Well, in fact, Kevin, let me ask you this. From a star standpoint, I mean, Samoa Joe's a legend. MJF is, you know, AEW's arguably top star, right? You know, it's not far off if he's not, and it's, you know, in the eye of the beholder. CM Punk, Ricky Starks, Andrade. Those are some, I mean, I think AEW fans would be hard on me if I didn't push back on the notion that Samoa Joe, CM Punk, Ricky Starks, Darby Allin, and MJF and maybe Adam Cole, you know, he was an NXT guy, not a main roster guy, but that they don't come across to a lot of people as stars.
And I wonder if I'm biased, and I've watched a lot of those guys come through the WWE landscape and kind of not achieve top tier billing. Because like when Samoa Joe came out, I was like, man, you know, I always wonder why this guy couldn't have been a bigger star. Because to me, he could talk and he could back it up. And you know, he's like one that I've always wondered about. But the other guys just seem like, and again, maybe I'm comparing them to the guys I watch on Monday and Friday nights. They just don't seem larger than life. And maybe that's just because I've grown up watching Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, now to the Roman Reigns of the world. Like, I just can't wait to watch SmackDown, and I can't wait to watch Raw, to be honest with you. And I'll continue to listen. I just love the way that you cover wrestling, so I'll continue to listen to your post shows on AEW. But, like, I would never go back and watch that. Like, that was just, to me, the one thing they did well is the show flew by. Like, it's not like Raw or SmackDown where you're sitting there with commercial breaks. Like, they did a good job structuring their show where the 2 hours flowed by. But I don't think I'd ever go and spend money to watch that again. Like, they just it just seemed like it just lacked, like everything that I've grown up to know about professional wrestling. And I know the people in Stanford probably love hearing that. But, like, it just like, that was a big swing. That was a big swing and a miss. And I'll be curious because I know you're going to get callers that are going to probably, like, light me up and stuff and say, I don't know nothing about wrestling. And I think that's great. I think wrestling's for everybody. And there was, like, 3,000 people here that love this today. But I just wasn't one of them.
Now, did you get pulled into any chance? You know, Double Clothesline, CM Punk, Fight Forever. Was there anything that where you got lost in the action and lost in the moment?
No.
Fair enough.
Not even bash his nuts. Not even.
No, I mean, somebody yelled. There was an occasion where a guy was in a 619 position, and somebody's like hit him with the 619, and I thought that was funny, but I didn't know what double clothesline meant, so I had to ask somebody.
Oh, sure.
Like,
why do they
keep banning that? And then they told me, but I just feel like that was like a minor. Like, to me, that was like below NXT. Which I know is going to anger some people, but that's kind of how I watched it. I was like, man, NXT is better than this.
Yeah.
And I know
I probably shouldn't have called them
an AEW post show and just bash it like this.
No,
so I'm sorry to AEW
you're
fans.
I think it's fun, yeah.
And Kevin, I don't consider that. I mean, maybe someone else will consider this bashing. I'm not going to rule that out. But I don't think you're hating on something because you have an opinion that a form of entertainment that wants your money doesn't strike a chord with you. I mean, it's like, that's, you don't have to feel guilty. That's not bashing it. It's not for you. It's not your thing. There's like, that's not bashing it. You're not like, how can anyone watch this? You're saying, I prefer this other thing. We have people who bash stuff. I've heard bashing. You're not bashing. You're saying, this presentation isn't for me. So you do not have to feel bad. You can if you want. You don't have to, though.
Like, when they announced it, I was like, oh, AEW's coming to town. Let me see if they can get me. Because there was a time where I was, like, really into it. And I was like, you know, when, like, Sammy Guevara was, like, I thought he was, like, a really cool wrestler and stuff. And I was like, wow, he's awesome. And then they just kind of lost me because WWE started picking up steam. The Tribal Chief just kind of took over wrestling. And I was like, oh, I love WWE again. But I was like, let me go.
Yeah.
Let me, you know, Andrade's going to be there. I love him. Like, I loved him. And he was going to be here. Buddy Matthews, I love watching him. And I was like, let me give it a shot. And so I went in there with an open mind. And then I was kind of excited to see MJF and Adam Cole in the tag team title match. I didn't think they were going to win. And I was kind of hoping for a swerve at the end. So I was kind of disappointed for that. But I don't know.
I think it was a swerve. I think that counts as a swerve in a sense. Yeah.
But aren't they feuding for like the title at some point? Or did I miss?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, MJF promised Cole a title shot, regardless of what happened in the tag match. Everyone was expecting a turn, you know, or not everybody. But, you know, I think most people were expecting a turn by far, and they just didn't know who, and it wasn't a turn. So in a way, that's a swerve.
Gotcha.
They swerved away from a turn and towards staying together. And it's just an unconventional swerve. So,
Like the CM Punk thing. Okay. I was kind of excited because I've been listening to your shows and hearing how the CM Punk reaction's been mixed depending on what town he goes out in.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting when he comes out, everybody cheers, everybody sings, and then as he's about to start talking, they start to boo him. And I'm like, man, that's kind of odd. Like, you guys seemed behind him when he was coming out. Now all of a sudden he's going to start talking, and then you start booing him. So I thought his reaction was kind of polarizing. It was almost like a John Cena reaction, which he'd probably hate because I don't think he likes him. But they cheered him on the way out, and then they started to boom. And it's funny, at the end of the show, FTR came back out because MJF called him out, and they kind of did a pizza and tequila thing. And the bald one, I think that's Dax Harwood, I think, for FTR.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He said, you know, it's funny, guys. When we come out, you boo us. But last week or 2 weeks ago, we gave you 58 minutes of our body. What's up with that? And then everybody cheered. And, you know, Daniel Bryan said it best. Us as wrestling fans are so fickle. You know, we don't know what we want half the time. But I thought the CM Punk. I'll be curious to hear what you guys have to say about CM Punk, you know, and what other people have to say, you know, once I hang out.
What do you think of Punk, though?
See, he just doesn't do it for me. That's why when Ricky Starks came out and kind of like, you know, owned him on the mic, I was like, all right, you know, let's just I'm through with the CM Punk drama. Like, it just seems like he just won't go away, and he's just kind of a cloud over AEW. And it's like, I wish Ricky Starks would beat him and they just move away from him. But I don't know. Like, I'm not a big fan of CM Punk.
Did Tony Khan come out during the show?
I didn't get there till, so like the gates were supposed to open at 6:30, but they didn't open till like 7:10-ish, my buddy told me. So I wasn't there for that. And then I got there during the Buddy and Andrade match, and then I left after FDR and Adam Cole and MJF did their thing. I believe there's Ring of Honor taping because people are saying that they're going to be taping until like 11:45, but there's just no way I would stay and watch that.
Yeah, we'll be talking to Mike in a second. He attended his first wrestling show ever. It was tonight, and he's our next on-site correspondent. So this is it's going to be a really interesting perspective from him, too. Well, Kevin, is there anything else you want to contribute, your thoughts on the show, before we move on and let you go?
Nothing on the show. Wade, I just want to tell you, like I've told you before, I love listening to your wrestling content. Like I said, I don't even like AEW, but I listen to your AEW Dynamite and your Collision Post show. I can't wait to listen to the rest of this one. I just want to thank you again because you're like, outside of WWE, you're like my wrestling person. So I just want to thank you for everything. Please keep doing it. It helps me get through the week. I love it, and I don't know what I would do without it. So I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart again, and thank you again for letting me talk
Kevin,
to you.
Kevin, I was going to retire at the end of this episode, but now that you don't know what you're going to do, if I do that, I feel pressure to keep going. So I'll keep going.
All right. Yeah, don't retire. Thank you for everything, and have a great show.
Thanks, Evan. I sincerely appreciate your compliments. I really do. That's very nice of you, and I appreciate it. Keep listening, and don't be a stranger. Call in again. Call the post-WWE show sometimes if it fits your schedule.
Sounds good. You guys have a great night, and thanks again for having me.
Sure thing. Yep, thanks. Our number, if you want to get in line to be on the show after we've talked to our next on-site correspondent, Mike, the number is 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, you can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, up now is Mike, our second on-site correspondent. Mike, welcome to the show. I'm excited to talk with you about your experience tonight.
Yeah, how you doing, Wade?
Good, good. So are you like buzzing from this? How was this experience for you?
It was a lot of fun. Like, it was, you know, my first time ever attending, you know, any like live wrestling show, but I've been a fan, you know, my entire life. You know, my first thing that I ever remember like watching in wrestling was Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow. And I was just enthralled by it, you know, and I've just been hooked since.
So how do you go back that far and you have not attended a show? I mean, like, I'm curious, like, I mean, there could be all kinds of factors. I'm curious what your story is.
Just never had an opportunity to.
Well, now you've experienced it. So, like, we can't compare it to other live experiences, but we can ask you, is it different than you expected to be in an arena watching something that you've been watching for decades?
Yeah, it was a lot, like, more fun. It was really engaging. You know, I was just screaming my head off all night long for everything. You know, I
that's great.
I was screaming for CM Punk, you know, FDR, you know, I just love wrestling in general. So, you know, if you entertain me, I'm going to like it.
Is this an experience that's going to draw you back as soon as you can to see another live event?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ado, you didn't sour you on the live wrestling experience. We can check that box.
Not
it's not a bad thing. Yeah. So let's get into some specifics, the things we'd normally talk to people about. You brought up CM Punk. In that CM Punk Ricky Starks segment, talk about what did you hear from your seat in terms of the reaction for Punk when the music hit, when he walked out, when the music stopped, and then as it progressed back and forth with Ricky Starks, Clearly, there were some fans who were pro-Ricky, others were pro-Punk, but kind of characterized the ebb and flow in the intensity of the pro and con towards Punk and also how the reaction to Starks factors in.
So when CM Punk came out, he immediately got, you know, a lot of cheers. Like, it felt more like 75-25, like, you know, in a cheer department. And then, you like, it would just go back and forth between, you know, each group just drowning each other out. And then when Ricky came out, like, his pop was, like, you know, but not as, like, you know, loud as CM Punk, you know, didn't, you know, really, I don't know, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So, yeah, so Punk, it was 75-25 cheers, and then they started booing. When the music stopped, what would you assess was the overall vibe towards him? Do you think it was just different pockets of fans expressing themselves at different times, or is it people who were both cheering and booing him, depending on the context and as things progressed?
I feel there was more just, there were certain pockets, you know, there was a pocket like shortly near me that was like extremely anti-punk, but, like, with me, we were all pro-punk, and, you know, it was, you know, a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Patrick, do you want to jump in with a question for Mike?
Yeah, Mike, congrats on your first show. That's awesome. One question I'm curious. So what brought you out tonight? Was it just the fact that it was the promotion itself, a specific wrestler or wrestlers, just the fact that they were in your area? So maybe it's a mix of all the above. Just curious, what was like the leading factor there?
It was close proximity, and it was my birthday. So I decided to, you know,
nice,
treat myself.
Awesome. Happy birthday to you.
Yes.
Happy birthday, yeah. So did you come away from the Punk Stark segment with any kind of difference on how you felt about both of those wrestlers? And who were you in favor of going in, or did you like both guys? And coming out of the segment, did that change at all?
I like both guys, you know, and, you know, CM Punk is going to get the mixed reactions he's going to get no matter where he goes right now, it seems. But, you know, I think if they keep on, like, you know, with Ricky Stark, he's going to, you know, really, like, pick up some steam. It's just I don't know whether they want him to be a face or a heel right now. So it's just like when you're going against CM Punk, it's tough to, you know, determine which way it's going to go.
Yeah.
But people
yeah.
really like,
how about the,
really like Ricky Starks.
Yeah. Did Ricky come across to you as somebody that you could see being a main event world champion or top guy on Collision that they build around, especially if they go with him as a heel? Which seems to be what they're doing.
No, because I just don't think he has the size. Because I, you know, I've now actually seen him, you know, in person, and he's not as, you know, he's not really that big. And to me, I think a world champion should at least have some size to them, you know, make it believable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, that is a factor.
But, I mean, you know, he can, you know, he could talk, you know, like with the best of them right now, pretty much.
When Darby Allin came out and then Minoru Suzuki was his opponent, did the crowd react like in a certain way, like this is a great bonus, this is a great opponent, and we're all into this? Or did it seem like some people were like, well, you know, what's going on here? It seems like AEW fans know New Japan really well, but I'm curious if Hartford was that way.
I was absolutely shocked to see Murder Grandpa. So,
yes.
Like, I have not, you know, I going into the show, I didn't even know Darby was announced until I got to the arena. And so I was really excited to see him come in. And then, you know, with the open challenge and get, you know, Minoru Suzuki to come out, that was, you know, a really good surprise.
Yeah. Patrick, jump in with another question if you've got one.
Yeah, since it's your first show, I'm also curious, always curious about the merchandise there. Did you buy anything there? Was there anything good? How was the line for the merch?
The lines for merch stand was at least over an hour long, and they only had about 8 to 10 shirts, you know, replica belts, but that was really about it.
Did you end up buying anything?
No, not tonight.
Yeah, he wanted to see his first wrestling show, not stand in the concourse in line for an hour and miss half of it.
Yeah, no, I wanted to see. As soon as the doors opened, I was in the bowl, right in the arena, you know, watched ROH tapings. You know, Tony Khan came out right before Collision started.
What did you think of Tony in person?
He seems like he's a nice guy, and he really enjoys, like, the product that he's putting on. And, you know, just, you know, you could tell he loves wrestling.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Did he come out after the show, too? Did he stay around long enough?
No, I kind of got out of there about the same time as the previous caller. It was just, I was getting, you know, exhausted. I was there from, you know, beginning to pretty late. I don't think I'm going to do another ROH taping.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the FTR reaction, because they're normally cheered and respected by the AW crowd, but the fans, the vocalist of the fans, were very into the MJF Adam Cole storyline. What was your assessment of the crowd? Did it seem like they were fair and respectful towards FTR, but just kind of more into the MJF Cole stuff? Or did they seem like really anti-FTR in some ways? Characterize that for me.
I think it's just they're a victim of circumstance. Like, they're getting booed because they're going against the, you know, the popular act of MJF and Adam Cole.
Yeah.
Hear them? It's just like people really love what's going on with Cole and MJF. I enjoy it. It's funny. Some people may not think it's, like, you know, worthy of being around, like, the top title picture, but, you know, are you being entertained by it? I am, so, you know.
How about the women's match? Sometimes we hear the women's match is kind of a downtime. Did the Mercedes Martinez Kiera Hogan match hold the fans' attention? Did it hold your attention? And was there much of a reaction for Willow Nightingale coming out? Because she's just had a really good month. Did it seem like she was a star that the fans were excited to see?
It was a little bit quiet, but when Mercedes Martinez came out, because she is local to the area, you know, she's very well known. You know, she got a decent pop when she came out. Kiera Hogan, but you know, the match was okay. Nothing, you know, that would blow anybody away, I would say. I don't think too many people realized it was Willow when she came out. I think, you know, if they would have liked cued her music, they would have popped more. But you know, I was really happy when she ran out, so I knew it was her immediately.
Yeah, cool. Was there somebody who jumped out to you as the most popular wrestler of the whole show?
The most polarizing, I would say, is CM Punk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most popular.
Was there anyone just universally loved by everybody? Like Darby, I would think would be a candidate for that based on who wrestled tonight.
I would say between Darby and Samoa Joe.
Interesting, Joe on that list. Patrick, did you sense that Joe was really popular?
That doesn't surprise me. I was actually at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view last Friday, and I sensed the same. He was very over with the live crowd there too, so I think I'm not surprised to hear that, actually.
Yeah. Was there any part of the legacy? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a part of the show that felt like it got boring or drawn out? Any part of any match, maybe a commercial break where the wrestlers downshifted or anything, or did it just flow for 2 hours?
It pretty much just flowed for 2 hours. Like, it was I wasn't aware of, like, too many commercial breaks, maybe two of them, but even then it felt like, you know, 90 seconds at the most, and, you know, but they really just kept the show flowing, like, straight through. Nothing really, like, disinterested me. Maybe the women's match just a little bit, but I just think they haven't booked it well, you know, the entire division.
Yeah,
it was good to see Chris Statlander back, but, like, you know, they need to be on TV like every week, you know, putting on like matches or trying to get themselves over. And you know, it's frustrating because they've got such a pool of talented women.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Were you? This is something I've heard over the decades. Were you surprised you couldn't hear the commentators?
No, I wasn't surprised. Not at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because there's people go to shows and they think the commentary, because all they've done is watch wrestling on TV. They just assume they'd be able to hear the commentators when they're there.
Yeah, no.
So,
I
you know, when you knew better.
I thought that would have been kind of weird to hear, like, coming over, like, a loudspeaker while you're in the arena. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I think you're normal and the people who expect your commentary are weird. But I'm just saying, if I went to said that to your face, if you thought it was, you know, you're going to hear the commentators. But now that you're on the right side of common sense, I will congratulate you for not expecting to hear the commentators. Mike, is there anything else you want to add about your experience? Anything else stand out being a longtime fan and now seeing it in person?
I had a pretty euphoric high while I was just in the crowd, just, you know, cheering and just having a lot of fun. And I would absolutely do it again. I would do it either for AEW or WWE. I enjoy both products.
That's cool. Well, if you attend a WWE show, I would love to get your thoughts on that compared to what you experienced tonight.
Yeah. I'd be afraid to go to a Raw just because it does seem like it could be a slog.
Yeah. I mean, it's better. We don't hear complaints lately, but it is 3+ hours instead of 2+ hours. So there's no question about that. But yeah, if SmackDown comes around, or a house show for that matter, a super show, let us know.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you so much. I hope you, come away with some fond memories after all these years.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It was an honor and a privilege to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Mike. We'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Yep. All right. We just lost our caller. Had been on hold. The first caller waiting the longest just hung up. So we apologize for not getting to you sooner. Did he just jump back on the line? I don't want to make him wait if he didn't. No, it looks like it's somebody different. All right. Well, anyway, who cares, right? We'll just take calls. I felt bad that Mark was on hold the whole time. And I was like, all right, we can finally get to Mark. And like literally 2 seconds before that, he hung up. All right. So let's go to Sergio in Connecticut. This might be someone who also attended. Sergio, welcome. Good to hear from you. What did you attend tonight?
I did attend tonight. I literally just got home. We just pulled in, and I figured I would call in to see if you had anybody who called in already or not, but because I haven't been able to listen to any of the show, I just got in.
Yeah, so we actually, the first two people we talked to attended the show. One is not an AEW fan, didn't enjoy, well, I don't know if he didn't enjoy, but it wasn't his favorite thing because he's so WWE right now. He gave AEW a try years ago, and then they didn't win him over. And another caller, he's been a fan for decades, but he had never attended a show before. So that was cool. But you, I assume, have attended AEW before.
I have. I've been to every AEW that's been in Connecticut. Well, except they did like a random like Rampage taping in Mohegan Sun like a year ago that I didn't attend. It was literally just Rampage, so I didn't go to that. But I've been to every one.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what your other guys told you, but like the crowd was hot today. Like it wasn't a complete sellout, and WWE was. Because WWE just had a show in Hartford, I want to say a month ago, a month and a half ago, and I was at that show as well, and that one was sold out. Like, that one was, like, completely sold out. Like, the 200s and all that was sold out. This, the 200s, they still had available seats, but, like, the lower bowl and the 100s area was, like, and it was scattered seats, but it was pretty full, and everybody was energetic. It was a lot of fun, man. The last AEW show I went to in Connecticut, it was Dynamite, and it was like a lackluster Dynamite, and WWE was on the upswing, and AEW, I think I even called in, and it was like, I'm not feeling the product right now, but I don't know if it's Collision, just the fresh faces, or the fresh presentation, or if I'm just happy I get to see people like Ricky Starks and CM Punk every week instead of like every other week and stuff like that, but I'm all in on Collision. I love Collision. Like, I'm with everybody that says, like, Collision just feels fresh. And I think that's why I enjoyed it, because it felt really fresh.
So you are an official collider. I think that's the term for collision, people who are favor collision over the other shows. So I want to get your take as someone who's been to AEW shows before and a lot of WWE shows in general, and have been an AEW fan too. What was your take on the crowd reaction to CM Punk and Ricky Starks? And do you think they're on the right course with both of them based on how this paying crowd of thousands of people in Hartford reacted to them initially and also the content of the segment? Like, did it come across as, oh, Ricky should be a babyface, what are they doing turning him heel? Or CM Punk should be heel, or CM Punk should be a face. So talk about the crowd reaction and then your thoughts on how they are presenting themselves.
The crowd reaction was very – it was so funny. Like, CM Punk, like, when they mentioned CM Punk, like, he gets, like, a pop. And then he comes out, and at least from where I was sitting, like, in the hundreds area. It was a huge pop, huge CM Punk chants. And I looked at my cousin, because my cousin goes to all the AEW shows with me. I said, and I was like, we ain't in an elite country. We're in CM Punk country, apparently, because this is a thunderous ovation. And then literally, as soon as the music stopped, like, boos just started ringing out throughout
yes.
the whole place. And I'm like,
so
what
weird.
Just happened? Did we just teleport to another arena or something like that? This difference was so stark. It literally caught me off guard. I'm like, how did we go from complete cheer? And at least from where I was sitting, it seemed like it was the whole building chanting CM Punk. And then when his music shuts off, it sounds like the whole building is booing. I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going on, but it was cool. I've been part of the whole John Cena sucks, Cena sucks, and boo Roman Reigns, cheer Roman Reigns, but I don't think I've ever sounds like a whole building is cheering somebody, and then on the drop of a dime, they're booing them. It was pretty wild, but it was flip-floppy. Like, I'm a big Ricky Starks guy, too. Like, part of the reason why I love Collision is because he's being featured week in and week out, and I don't even know how to explain. Like, I guess they were both heels and both faces. Like, sometimes CM Punk would come off more heelish, and he would get booed for it, and Ricky would come off more babyface. And I don't know. For me, I just love both guys, and I just want to see a good story, and I'm just glad to see them both. But the crowd was, I feel like, more into CM Punk, but Ricky Starks did have his followers, but like CM Punk was just so down the middle, and Ricky Starks, I feel like, was more cheers than boos, if that makes any sense.
I was fascinated by that too. It seemed like the people who don't like Punk just sort of politely let the Punk fans cheer and chant, but then when the music stopped, they're like, all right, we're taking over, and they just waited for their moment. Tell me about what it's like to be there for Cole and MJF. That's obviously a storyline where I said it's fun. I'm along for the ride. I don't think everything they did along the way was, you know, A-plus work or segments, but I think a lot of it was really good. But people were expecting this would be the turn. I'm curious what you expected, what the crowd expected, and how did you and the crowd react to the tease of MJF hitting Cole with a belt? Did they kind of understand what was happening? Because the camera filmed Cole up close going, I should have known better. I knew it all along. Do what you got to do. He was willing to take a blow from behind. The fans were warning him. And it was sort of a test for MJF. In a sense, Cole just admitting, I deserve this if it's going to happen. And then MJF didn't hit him. I'm curious how that played in the live arena compared to on TV, where we had the context and the close-up camera and could overhear what Cole was saying.
Well, at least from where I was sitting, it was funny because, like, the crowd was almost like, what's that noise that they make? Like, when they're, like, winding up to say Adam Cole, baby, when it's like, whoa, you know, that kind of, like, sound. Like, when MJF had the title, I'm not sure if you guys can see it, but MJF had the title in his hands, and he looks like he's raring to hit Adam Cole with the title. Like, it looks like he's going to do it. But he turns around and he hits his head on the turnbuckle, and he's like, no, I can't do it. But he's like, no, I'm going to do it. So every time he teased it, the crowd was just like, I feel like they were just like at the edge of our seats, like saying, like, is he going to do it? Is he not going to do it? Like, the crowd was invested in it because I saw Adam Cole turned his back, and I saw he had like his arms stretched out. I was assuming he was saying something into the camera, but like everybody was super invested because like MJF was just playing the, I'm going to hit him, I'm not going to hit him. I'm going to hit him, I'm not going to hit him. And it had everybody, including me, at the edge of my seat because I was convinced that we were going to be here for the turn, whether it was MJF on Cole or I know there was a few people like sprinkling like, hey, maybe Adam Cole's the mastermind and he's going to turn. But it was a lot of fun. It's an act that's completely over with the crowd, which is a lot of fun because whenever MJF pretends to be a babyface, like everybody, I feel like everybody knows it's not going to last. So they're like, let's just enjoy it while it's here. But it kind of kills. Oh, I felt so bad for FTR. Like when their music hits and it's nothing but boobs, like I'm looking at my cousin and I'm like, this hurts my heart. I love FTR. You know what I'm saying? Like I love FTR. And I think they're with the Usos, like one of probably the best tag team in wrestling. And like, I wasn't booing FTR. I was cheering FTR, but like, it's just one of those things. MJF and Cole are just so entertaining in that, it's weird to say, in that WWE skit kind of way that everybody's into
KO
them.
Jericho.
It reminds me of Team Hell No. You know, Team Hell No was over in that way.
Yep.
Where, like, you know, there was tension and stuff like that. But I think people just have so much fun when MJF's the babyface. And it's just because he hands it up and it's so over the top and everybody's like, this isn't going to last very long, but let's just enjoy it while it's here kind of thing. But the thing is undercuts. It undercuts the people he goes up against so bad. Like, I felt so bad for FTR. And this isn't the first time, you know, I've heard you guys talk about it before in the past. Like, when they do this with MJF, this will he, won't he, is he a babyface, is he not? The crowd is so invested in him that they always choose him, even though they know he's going to turn. They're like, we know, but, you know, it's MJF, so we're cool with this for now. And I don't know, man. You're going to do some damage to some people doing stuff like that because FTR, man, I felt terrible that being in there and just listening to that whole arena just boo them out of the building.
When everything was over with, the show went off the air after the hug. Talk about how things kind of dissipated. I know there was a previous caller said there was some stuff that happened afterwards. Just describe that for us and talk about the crowd reaction too.
Yeah, I mean, some of the crowd started getting, but like a lot of the crowd stood and MJF grabbed the microphone and, you know, he said, cut the music, and he calls FTR back into the ring. I'm not sure if you guys got a detail of what happened, but MJF calls FTR back into the ring, and FTR comes out after a little bit of a pause. I don't know if they were deep in the locker room or something, if this caught them off guard, but it took a while for FTR to actually come back out. And MJF said, we're going to have some pizza, because he brought up the Pinnacle, and he said, you know, everybody knows that not too long ago there was a group called the Pinnacle, and the Pinnacle had way more potential, and we never reached it. And he was blaming himself. He was in full MJF babyface mode. He was saying it was his fault. He had his eye off the prize. He had his best interest at heart, and he didn't understand how great FTR is. But after being in the ring with them, he understands, and he kind of apologizing to them and saying, like, we're going to have pizza. Because, you know, a lot of people say Connecticut has the best pizza. I think it has great pizza. So he brings out a pizza, and there's tequila, and they basically have, like, a pizza party. And Adam Cole is hamming it up with, like, dancing and stuff like that, which I think Adam Cole just got to stop dancing. It's going to be hard to take him seriously as a main eventer if he's just going to keep dancing every week. But it was just like MJF just goes into straight babyface mode. And, like, I don't know. I love being behind it. But, like, he's putting over AEW, saying that the thing that FTR, Adam Cole, and MJF have in common is that they all love professional wrestling. And it shouldn't be Collision versus Dynamite. It should be both of them together because this sport needed an alternative, and that's what AEW is. And I love AEW. And he's like full rah-rah speech. And then, of course, MJF being MJF, he's like, I love AEW, and I'm so glad to be here. And then on the side of the mic, he says, well, at least until 2024. And he says, and then we'll talk about that some other time. We'll talk about that some other time. And he just has the crowd
I was wondering.
In the palm of his hand. And it's just it's fun, but also it's damaging because the first thing Dax says, because Dax eventually gets the microphone in his hand too, and he says, wow, we gave you guys 58 minutes of our bodies a couple weeks ago, and you just booed us out of the building. So I know Dax is a little sensitive to stuff like that. So I really think it affects these guys. Like, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, the baby faces here, and we're getting booed out the building. So I think they got to stop doing that with MJF, where every few months they're like, hey, let's have MJF a baby face for a few weeks because he's just too over with the fans. The fans just love MJF too much.
Fans are fans of wrestlers who are entertaining. And you've got to be careful. Well, obviously, he's going for cheers right now. But he was going for cheers in a way where I think people were going to say, don't buy it. It's not real. Adam Cole, you should know better. And instead, people just got into the dynamic. And I don't know if the turning point was MJF playing video games going, I've never played video games with anyone because I didn't have any friends to play video games with. And all of a sudden, he became like this human being who is not only entertaining and obviously just loves professional wrestling as much as any wrestler does. And I think people have picked up on that. But I think people just started feeling for him. And then Cole and MJF have a genuine chemistry that I don't think people saw coming. So I'm not, you know, if you're FTR, it's like they're going to be cheering you against anybody else. But you just happen to cross paths at this moment with this act that is, you know, doing probably a relatively short-term story arc that's been super entertaining and different. And, you know, I hope Dax and Cash sleep well at night because I don't think this will be anything that returns. But it does send a signal if you're FTR and you're really proud of your wrestling and your 58-minute match that, you know, even AW fans are cool with song and dance routines and buddy skits and that kind of thing. I mean, it isn't just about what Jay and Juice and FTR did, but that they got a ton of props and a ton of respect and a ton of cheers for doing that too. I just think AW fans, for better or for worse, the ones who are attending like that whole range of what AW is presenting. And on this night, they were a little more into the novelty of Cole and MJF. Our previous caller said Samoa Joe might have gotten one of the better reactions of the night. Talk about the crowd reactions that stood out to you during the event.
The reaction that stuck out to me, besides the obvious ones, because we already talked about the obvious ones, because CM Punk, Adam Cole, MJF, they were like out of this world compared to everybody else. But Darby was a lot of fun because Tony Khan came out before the show starts, as he always does, being his like energetic, youthful, but kind of dorky self. And he's like, you know, I got a surprise for you guys tonight. Darby Allin's here tonight, and he has an open challenge, and you're going to be so excited on who I send out here to face him, kind of thing. So that got the juices flowing. It was just Darby was super over. I'm surprised. Andrade, he's never quite been for me, but I felt like maybe it was just the sheer of how good the ladder match was. I don't know how it came off on TV, but in the arena, the ladder match was super over and super fun. And I'm not the biggest New Japan guy, but I am a huge wrestling fan, so obviously I'm super aware of Minoru Suzuki, and I thought that was super cool when he was the one who took the open challenge. And my cousin went to the restroom. My cousin's a bigger New Japan guy than I am. He actually went to the restroom. He's like, all right, I got to use the bathroom. And he heard Minoru Suzuki's music, and I literally see him sprinting back to his seat, which I thought was hilarious.
That's great.
Which was a lot of fun. But, besides the usuals, it's just like Darby's over and Andrade was over and everybody got up as soon as the women's segment started, which was kind of sad. Like, that makes me sad when I see, like, especially Mercedes Martinez. She's from where I'm from, Waterbury, Connecticut. So, like, you know, every time I see her come out, I'm like, oh, there's, you know, a fellow, I don't even know what to call us, Waterburyan, I guess we call us. I'm like, it's a lot of fun to see her, like, in a national stage, but as soon as the women's part starts, everybody just gets up and goes to like concessions and stuff like that, which is kind of sad. But I'm just happy because the Dynamite that came, I don't know, 6 months ago or something like that, the crowd was dead. It wasn't even close to full. And it was kind of sad because the first time AEW came to Connecticut, it was hyped up and everybody was so excited for it. And it just feels like AEW is kind of going back up a little bit, and maybe it's just Collision, the excitement for Collision. I don't know. But this was a crowd that was fully invested. The people who were there were fully invested in what AEW was giving us, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. So, but they're down from where they were, but you think they're on the way back up. And I think there's something to that. Did this feel to you like a full-fledged AEW show? Because you didn't see Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman and Moxley and Danielson and on and on. You know, the you know, a lot of the core Dynamite wrestlers, and frankly, just the that's like, you know, seven out of the top 12 wrestlers, you know, in AEW history were not on this show, give or take. I'm just assuming, estimating the numbers there. Did it feel like you got your money's worth of the AEW product, or did it feel a bit like a split show?
For me personally, like, I felt like we got our money's worth. I thought it was great. I thought it was fun. Like, a lot of these guys, maybe I'm just biased, but a lot of these guys are my favorite guys. Like, CM Punk, love CM Punk. Ricky Starks, love Ricky Starks. Samoa Joe, like, these guys are, like, some of my favorite. I would have liked to have seen Jay White there because I was excited. Like, I was like, oh, we're going to see Jay White today probably, too. I mean, we got the cardboard cutout gag, which was pretty funny, actually. Like, we got a kick out of it. So I wish we could have seen Jay White, but... Me personally, no. It felt like an AEW show, and the crowd, I mean, if you're going by the energy in the building and even walking out, like how people, the buzz, like as we were walking out, it didn't feel like a group of people who got like, oh, we only got half a show or we only got half a roster. And I don't know if that speaks to the quality of Collision because, like I said, ever since Collision debuted, I'm like, man, this is a quality wrestling show. It's probably my favorite wrestling viewing experience. I look forward to watching Collision every Saturday, which I didn't think I would be, to be honest with you. But it's just, I don't know if that speaks to the quality of the show or the consistency that, hey, we're seeing these people every week. But it didn't feel like I got cheated, and it doesn't seem like the crowd felt like they got cheated either.
I said something very similar to Patrick at the top of the show, that I'm in, I wasn't sure that I was going to be happy covering a fourth wrestling show every week if it felt like a B show. But it doesn't. I mean, it feels great watching the show on Saturday nights. Like, I'm with you. I look forward to it. And I think they've done a really nice job with it so far. So, I think a lot of people are feeling. I'm very curious, I said this earlier, what the ratings turn out to be for the show. You know, this was, one of the bigger matches they could have presented, and we'll see the drawing power of this Cole MJF thing. Is it niche? Is it driving more people away in addition to being really popular with a slice of the audience? Is it also driving certain a significant portion away? And it's not differentiating itself enough from WWE or not. You know, we're going to find out, in a few days when those ratings come up. Patrick, is there anything else you want to ask Sergio?
Yeah, real quick. I know you did a great job, Sergio, talking about the night and a lot of different things. I'm curious, because we haven't really talked about this, what was your reaction and the crowd's reaction to this? I guess they're calling it the Real World Championship now. What is your reaction to that? How did the crowd respond in the arena?
The crowd, like, I don't know if it came off, but, like, he's like, you want to know what's in the bag? And then there was a super loud, like, what's in the bag? What's in the bag? What's in the bag? I don't know. I guess I'm fine with it. The crowd seemed super into it, at least where we were. Like, there was, like, an audible gasp when he finally, like, pulls the title out of the bag just because he's been teasing it for so long. Like, hey, what's in the bag? When he pulls the title out, and it's literally just the AEW title that's been on TV, you know, since the company started. But just seeing it in the hands of CM Punk and seeing him finally acknowledge, like, instead of talking around and being like, no, I'm the real world champion, even though, like, you know, like, I mean, you got hurt, dude. I mean, you didn't lose it, but you did get hurt and, you know, you got suspended or whatever happened. But, it felt like the crowd was into it. Me personally, I just can't wait till him and MJF finally cross paths over it. Like it's building my anticipation. I don't know when they're going to do this. I don't know if we're aiming for All In or Grand Slam or I don't know where they're going to do it, but I'm super looking forward to when finally MJF acknowledges, like, hey, this guy's carrying a title, and it's not the real world title. I have the real world title. And when he did spray paint the X, like, he pulled out the spray paint and he spray painted the X, that got a big pop from the crowd, too. Like, the crowd seemed totally into it. Me, I'm hit or miss with it, but the crowd seemed completely into it, which made me – When the crowd's into it, you're kind of into it too. So it was cool to be there live when he finally takes his title out of the bag. Because you could say that. Like, oh, I was there when he finally took the title out of the bag and proclaimed himself the real world's champion. So that was pretty cool.
Sergio, is there anything else you want to share with us about your experience tonight at the show?
I think that's about all. Like that, I just got to say, I love Collision. It was a super breezy 2 hours. The first time I looked at my watch, literally, well, the first time I looked at my watch was when the show started at 8 o'clock. The next time I looked at my watch, it was 9:53. And I was like, whoa, we have 7 minutes left in the show. The show breezed by. It was awesome. I loved it. I'm all in on Collision. I'm all in on seeing, like, these new faces. I'm just glad that I feel like they're not just presenting another show that just has more of the Elite on it and more of Moxley and more of Jericho. I'm glad they have a show where, like, it seems like they're making a real effort to feature newer, different talent, you know, because I just didn't want two shows that were just going to be like, oh, you're just going to see Kenny and the Buck two times in a week.
Exactly.
Like, I'm glad that the shows feel different. It was a lot of fun, and I'm glad I went, and my enthusiasm for AEW is back, not to quite the fever pitch, but definitely not in the doldrums of where it was when I left my last Dynamite show. I'm pumped and ready to see where this goes, especially MJF versus CM Punk. And also, before I hang up, I do want to say I love that The Fix was the simulcast this week and that it was on the flagship. I love The Fix. Everybody, please go VIP. The Fix Mailbag is my favorite podcast of the week. I love hearing it, and I can't put it over enough. I love your and Todd's chemistry. It's better than MJF and Adam Cole, if you ask me. So everybody go VIP to listen to that.
Sergio, thank you for the plug. Everyone check out the Blue Logo Show, the Weight Killer Pro Wrestling Podcast. You can hear the current events discussion with Todd, the news-based one. And then Sergio's talking about the VIP exclusive portion this week, the mailbag. It is great stuff, Todd. Todd puts a lot of effort and time into those questions. And sometimes we start late. I shouldn't say sometimes. I think once that happened, maybe twice, where he's like, for sure twice. Now I think about it. Where he's like, I got to do more research on this. I owe the VIP members a little bit more of an effort into researching what I want to say and how I'm going to say it about this. But he puts a lot into it. We get great questions from VIP members. And, it's certainly a signature show with the VIP membership. So pwtorch.com/goVIP, everybody. pwtorch.com/goVIP. Sergio, thank you. I appreciate your support, kind words, and your time tonight. Glad you had a good time.
Have a great night, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. You too. All right. Well, we were talking to Sergio. Mark called back. I was like, yes, Mark called back. And then he hung up again. Mark.
Oh, poor Mark.
I don't know. Maybe he's got a dog who, you know, puppy, he's got a train or something, and he can only be on hold so long. All right. So let's go to Jay in Michigan. Jay, we just talked to you last night. And here you are again. Welcome to the show. What do you think of that? What do you think of Collision?
Hey, I'm pulling double duty, man. You know, I'm working multiple shows. I usually don't do that. So
yes.
But
well, let's get right to it. What do you think Collision? What stood out to you?
I want to echo the sentiments of the gentleman Sergio and the other guy who I heard on just prior. You know, Collision just feels like a fresh show. I'm not a huge follower of AEW. You know, I'm a wrestling fan, but as far Collision just has all the guys that I want to see. I mean, I'm a big CM Punk fan. I really like Ricky Starks. I really like Samoa Joe. I really like Jay White. You know, the Collision feels to me a lot like how SmackDown felt in 2016 when they did the brand split. It just has a lot of the talented guys that I really want to see on the show. And then it feels like Collision's energy is like they're trying to prove that they belong. And like, it just makes for a very good show. And then I think that their show is just more cohesive, man. And it just flows and makes more sense. So the thing that I will say about tonight, I mean, we finally got to the whole CM Punk thing about what's in the bag, which we kind of already knew was in the bag. So I'm excited to see where they're going to go with that. I thought that maybe MJF or somebody would kind of acknowledge the whole thing, and maybe they did unless I missed it. But, you know, eventually we're gonna get to something because, like, CM Punk's just basically making it like I'm the champion and this is Collision's title. And, you know, that's going to come to his head at some point, and I'm looking forward to that. So all in all, man, I just enjoy when I get an opportunity to watch Collision, I just enjoy watching that show.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about the show tonight? Good comments there, though.
No, nothing else. I'm pretty. You guys probably already covered everything, really. But yeah, man, I enjoy it. Say that with the whole Adam Cole MJF thing, man. I'm also interested to see where that goes because I don't really see any way that they flip as far as characters. I don't see that, and but I'm interested to see how they end up splitting, you know, because it does have that Jericho KO feel to it. But you know, a lot of the stuff they do is very WWE sports entertaining. You know, with MJF, I mean, MJF is just phenomenal, like in every way. So I'm interested to see how they part ways and you know, remain in the same characters, if you will. But I'm enjoying what they do, and I'm just enjoying Collision overall.
Great. Well, Jay, good talking to you. Thanks for calling again, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Of course, man. Take care.
All right. So I'm interested to talk about a few things, Patrick, now that we got our on-site correspondence out of the way and talk to Jay, who's been on hold a while. CM Punk brings out, pulls the world title out of the bag. And one, I don't know if this is old school or not or just timeless, but I think there should be one belt. And even if there's more than one belt, that should be a secret. Like, I don't want there to be, like, a Stanley Cup and then a different Stanley Cup and then another Stanley. I want one belt that represents the champion. Why does Punk have a copy? And did he steal it from MJF's locker room? Or does MJF have another one? And if so, why are there two? Does every champion who wins a belt get to keep one and they create a new one? I want to think when I see someone wearing a belt, that is the exact belt that was around the waist of the previous champ, the previous champ, the previous champ. So that's me. But that's a little side item. It's not that big of a deal. But what I think is a bigger deal is on the same show that MJF wrestled in the main event on, CM Punk pulled out a title belt that doesn't belong to him. It's fraudulent. However you feel about Punk, when you get injured and you can't defend the title for a very long time, you get stripped of the title. You don't get to say, well, I never got pinned or submitted, so I'm the real champion. No, you got hurt. You get stripped. That's how it works. You don't get to keep a title if you can't defend it. One of the keys of being a world champion is durability and good fortune, good luck. He didn't have that. So I didn't like sour on him as a character, but it's not the most sympathetic point of view. But even with that said, MJF's on the show, and MJF just ignored it. It wasn't the time for him to address it. I'm not saying he should address it, but it was the wrong show for Punk to pull the belt out of the bag because the actual champion didn't react to it. And that's a really big deal. You got to protect your championship, your main world championship. Punk just said, I'm the real champ, and I have this belt, and I'm Elon Musking it with an X.
So much joke there.
I will dare say neither of us probably are the only.
No.
We're not the only ones who thought that. And although Punk should have thought me.
Right.
X has lost some of his cachet. Thank you, Elon. I just talked to a son of one of my neighbors. He's like, yeah, I sold my Tesla. I can't drive around with something that represents Elon anymore. And Elon's a joke. My God. All right. Don't get me sidetracked. I'm sidetracking myself. So how do you feel about that? Like if you're going to have Punk, if we're headed towards Punk and MJF, the show on which Punk revealed that he still has the title in the back, if he's considering himself the real champ, and MJF's out there yucking it up with Adam Cole, doing a very it's very over, it worked, but it feels like, wait, the world champion should have something to say about it if he's in that building, and he didn't.
This is the topic I've been waiting to talk about since I saw it on the show tonight, because you're 100% right. I was wondering if any of the callers would speak to it, and the last caller kind of hit on it a little bit. But this is week 7 of Collision. Punk brought that out, that bag with the title in it, in week 1, and maybe once or twice again. MJF's been is this like his second Collision show? I mean, my point here is, this didn't have to happen on the same show MJF has a big main event match in. To your point, it undermines him as champion to then come out later in the show not mention it because, again, from a storyline perspective, he's not, you know, he's not involved with Punk. There's no feud, etc. at the moment. It makes him look silly. And I'm not sure a lot of people picked up on that, but to me, it was glaringly obvious. Now, I didn't really think about it as Punk was doing it. The second MJF came out, it just was like one of the, you know, the glass shatter moment where you just realize something that should happen that shouldn't. And I'm wondering if Tony Khan, like, did he not think about this? I just can't understand. To me, this was the biggest issue of the night for me. The show, great show. This is the problem I walked away with. I'll go back to maybe a positive. I kind of like the idea. I understand what you're saying with one title belt and that kind of getting passed on and on. I guess they can get away with that a little bit with MJF's custom-made belt. So there's an element of that. And then I just kind of like the idea. This is almost like the Ric Flair coming from WCW to WWF. They're actually even using the same term, Real World Championship. I kind of like that idea. I just thought, why would you do it on a show that your actual world champion is on, has nothing to do with this program? You make him look stupid. You make him look silly, inadvertently. And he really cannot address this because it's not his feud and is not, you know, his storyline at the moment. So I am dumbfounded by this. I'm not sure what they were thinking or not thinking. But yeah, you can tell it really did bother me. It really was just a weird thing to do, and they didn't have to do it.
No, they did not have to do it. And I mean, they can have their reason and like, well, this worked out because Starks and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, no, I mean, I just don't think MJF should be on the show where Punk says I'm the real world champion. I think I'm repeating myself. It made MJF
Another thing coming to mind too, I don't know if this makes sense, but it almost made Punk feel like the guy at the podium after All Out last year. He was like kind of reverting back to undermining other talent. And maybe that's part of his gimmick now. I don't know. You know, when he returned to the first Collision, he kind of got back to that a little bit. But that's how I viewed him personally when he was doing it in the ring. Before I even was thinking about the whole MJF being on the same show element of it, he was just the verbiage he used and just kind of talking down to anyone that's not him, just was off-putting in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, you know, Punk's got to be careful of how he comes across when he starts speaking his mind in a way that might come across negatively to fans who the goal isn't to turn against him. Like, you know, they're just, you know, it's like, you know, you've got friends and you're going to a party or you're going to meet somebody, hang out at some new person's house, and you're bringing a friend along, and you might tell that friend, you know how sometimes you tell off-color jokes? You know, that works in our group, but I don't know if it'll work in this group. So just like, you're really entertaining and engaging, but maybe don't go there tonight. Let's feel this group out. Like, I feel like someone needs to tell Punk, I know this is on your mind, and I know that you think I need to say this and blah, blah. But, like, it might not play well with the audience that you're trying to win over, that Tony Khan is paying you to win over or, like, not have rebel against you. And, sometimes he can go places because he just feels so strongly about it, and it can actually unravel some of the progress that has been made. It sounded like that happened with you.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. It actually reminded me, your example reminded me of a Jim Gaffigan joke where two groups of friends are around and he tells one group of friends, don't be thrown off by my British accent. Just acting totally different in another group. So you hit home with that one for sure.
Yep. Okay, so then we also have Punk saying, am I the only wrestler who's ever brought up Wembley Stadium? I think so. And why is that?
Thank you. Yes.
Like, I mean, I'm like, first of all, they should be talking about Wembley, and they're not. So that's a problem.
Nobody is. It's incredible. The most, I'll let you finish, but this is getting me riled up too.
Yeah. And so, but Punk shouldn't bring it up in the sense that you're drawing attention to something that doesn't serve a purpose other than a thought that entered your head that you didn't filter. Like, that's what they came across as. Like, why draw attention to the fact that AEW very weirdly is not talking about this show other than the announcer started talking about 88,000 people setting a record for attendance in the venue. But, like, are we going to be able to see it? What are the matches?
Right.
Like, it's so weird. And if you bought a ticket to that show, and you're traveling to see it, like, by now you'd kind of like to know how the match is. Is Tony, like, waiting to put the lineup together because he's nervous because it's the first time Punk and the Elite are going to be in the arena at the same time, and he's just, like, not wanting to face this reality of you know, it's like your basement is flooding, and you just, well, I'm going to solve it by not going downstairs. And it's like, no, you got to deal with this. So
right,
I don't
know
what's going on. It's weird, but I don't know that it served a purpose for Punk to draw attention to. And then he goes, well, maybe by the end of the night we'll know who my opponent's going to be. And then Tony and I know you got something to say about it, but
– No, that's okay, yeah.
So Punk anticipated Starks coming out, anticipated that he's going to want another match. Okay, I mean, it's better to acknowledge it than to not if you're going to suddenly have someone already lined up for something that somebody said, you know, for an unannounced, unplanned thing. They should have said it's a Punk Ricky Starks face-to-face, talking about – they should have advertised Punk Starks face-to-face, Starks wants a title shot. They should have said that. And then it would have worked. But instead, Punk goes, well, I anticipated you were going to say that. So I have this, you know, sometimes wrestlers in WWE go, so I have a video package ready to go. Because I
right.
Like, sometimes you stretch it a little bit. I like that versus not acknowledging the coincidence or, you know, how did you know? But nevertheless. Then, so you have that happen. And then Shivani knows already, too. Like, Punk informed Shivani.
Right, yeah.
So Shivani's like, well, you name it. Oh, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, which is cool. I'm glad that's happening. I love you and Rick and Bonnie going, you couldn't have a more straight-laced referee than Ricky Steamboat. He's never cheated in his life. And this whole storyline is based around cheating, which I like. I like the babyface calling out the heel for taking pride in winning by cheating. So I'm on Punk's side on this. I'm on Team Punk on, yeah, you know, you can say I'm not bothered by it. It happens. You know, I'm not going to whine about it. But are you really proud? Like, I think that's a really good way to handle it. But my final point on this is, how did Shivani know when the match is going to happen?
Yeah.
Suddenly,
yeah.
Like, Punk didn't, Starks didn't go, next week I want
right.
you in the ring.
No.
Punk didn't go, how about next week? They just, I thought it was going to be Wembley or Grand Slam or All Out. But no, Tony just somehow knows it's a match that just got made on the spot. He knows that it's going to be next week. He didn't touch his earpiece and go, oh, Tony Khan just said, fans, Tony Khan just told me through the earpiece, he booked it for next week. Like, no, it's just, so the attention to detail wasn't there. There are a lot of weird things about that promo, a lot to unpack. You know, there's a lot to like, but I think there were some things that were just like, that was weird and not well thought through. So Patrick, over to you.
Yeah, no, not at all. And that was, that's a good way to put it. Just not well thought through. And, I'm looking back at my notes because as I was watching the show, obviously take some notes here. I have a note that I did not go back and edit out because it says nice foreshadowing about his match at Wembley, meaning, CM Punk. But he never actually told us. He gave us a foreshadow of something that did not happen. The fact that this is the most we've heard anyone talk about this huge show that's teetering on, I think, 80,000 people, and they kept pushing 88,000 tonight, is mind-boggling. I think we're 4 weeks away, actually less than 4 weeks away, and there's nothing booked officially, and there's a pay-per-view the week after as well, and one match technically is booked with Darby Allin fighting for the TNT title. This is not apples to apples because it's Ring of Honor versus this 80,000+ Wembley Arena show, but this is similar. It's the same booker, so I mean, it is apples to apples in that regard. But I was going, like I said, I went to the Ring of Honor pay-per-view last week, and I think the night before they finally put a card out, and it's pretty obnoxious to go to a show, big or small, and not even know who you're going to see. You know, again, big or small, you're still the fan paying the money to go to a show, and put your time into it, really. So that's really bothersome to me. And I don't know, you have all this time, you have, you know, a number of hours every single week, and they're not able to, whether they're building to these storylines in these matches is one thing, but to not give fans actual card or, you know, anything to entice them to actually, you know, tune in. And to your point, we don't even know how we can tune in yet. So I know that's seemingly up in the air. I don't know if it's pay-per-view or there's something else in the works that maybe is stalling the fact that we can't know yet, but we don't know anything. So it's hard to, you know, to really put your thumb on it. But yeah, this specifically, this was just, there's so many things you can just pick apart, and you did a better job than I could, but it's bothersome. And I think that, I think that it's just lack of foresight in this type of angle, because I think having, and maybe this goes back to the world title, this real world champion, it felt flat. Like, this could be a pretty hot angle, I think, if done a certain way. Now, I don't have the answer to how they would do it better necessarily, but I just think this was kind of an after-the-fact type of an approach, especially, again, in theory, it's been a 7-week build with Punk bringing the title back on Collision number, episode number one. So it was just kind of an after-the-fact or kind of a throwaway in many ways. So I don't know. That's just my thoughts. And I think you hit on most of them anyway. But, it just kind of fell flat for me.
Yeah. Well, we can explore that more. Let's hit some emails and see where they take us, and then we can circle back at the very end and round out any points or bring up other topics that don't get covered here in the emails. First up in our mailbag section here is Ribbon, I believe. Hey, Wade, straight out of the gate, I have to say this is the first week I've enjoyed Collision more than Dynamite. There was a lot of very good wrestling on the show, and it had the energy of a Dynamite. I have to be honest, the past few weeks that I've listened to your shows, I've raised an eyebrow at people who have said they prefer Collision and consider it, quote, better than Dynamite by a country mile. During the first 3 to 4 episodes in particular, I found myself zoning out at times and just feeling bored by the low energy pacing. However, it really came together tonight. I know not every show can be like this, though. An exciting gimmick match, a surprise opponent, an intriguing in-ring promo exchange, which featured multiple surprises, and some great pro wrestling all around, including a title match in the main event. All that to say, I love tonight's episode. Now to my question. Did Ricky Starks come off as cheesy on the mic tonight? The line about beating Punk twice and Ricky being very nice or something along those lines didn't really land with me. Ricky's one of those guys who sometimes nails it and brings fresh original language to his promos, and at other times he tosses out C material. Luckily, it doesn't seem to matter as the crowd loves him. Anyway, something to chew on. Keep up the good work. Okay, so two things there. One, it's kind of interesting. He liked this show better, and we observed, and others have, that this was a little more Dynamite-like in its pacing.
Yeah.
Now, I think it was somewhere in the middle. I don't think it's the – and Dynamite's not always frenetic and exhausting and you know, too much,
sure,
too
sure.
fast. So, you know, they all have variances. But this did feel a little bit more along the lines of something that – if you prefer the Dynamite, more frenzied, high-energy, adrenaline rush format, then this show would be the Collision you would like more than other Collisions. So we observed that, and I think that's true. Do you agree with that assessment, and does it then not surprise you that he liked this Collision more than the others?
No, I think that's a great assessment. I think it's right on. I think we kind of spoke to that up front on tonight's show, too. And even, like, the ladder match, which we actually haven't really spoke to too much tonight, that kind of came and went. They did the ending, and there really was no post show, a post match anything happening after that. I think they cut to the Miro program, and then all of a sudden Darby Allin was coming out. So yeah, things like that just move things along and didn't really linger really at all.
Yeah. Yep. The Starks thing, totally agree. I'm glad he brought that up. I wrote that in my report at pwtorch.com covering tonight's show. I thought Ricky was good, and I like Ricky Starks. But there are times where, I don't know what was in the ring. I should have asked one of our on-site correspondents what he kicked. Do you know what it was?
I think it was just the bag for the title itself.
Oh,
the red
okay.
bag. Yeah.
Sure. Yep. But it did seem to, like, legit throw him off a little bit, and he kind of had to gather himself. But, mm-hmm. yeah, the not only the line, and he picked the one out that I think most – didn't work, which is, yeah, I can beat you twice because I'm very nice, whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like just because something rhymes doesn't mean you should do it. And it did. I get, and I mean, it is something Ricky should do, like, you know, kind of have a Muhammad Ali type, you know, cadence to what he does. Like, that is who he is, and that's who he's going to be. But that just wasn't, I don't think it was, you know, it was C-minus material for him, as he called it, C-material. Okay, I'm stealing his characterization. The other thing I didn't like, and not because it's dated, but it's just so trite, is the Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder could be the referee, and I'd still win. It's like, I don't know. Like, I don't. It's just, you know, a blind famous person, and Stevie Wonder's the go-to person. I don't know. I just was sort of like, I think you, if you're gonna go out there with sunglasses and the cool clothes and act like you're the coolest guy, be a little find a little fresher material in that way too. That said, overall, I liked it, and I like that Starks is getting a push, and I think he's on his way to being a bigger star by getting this TV time and playing off of Punk. But I didn't think it was his best work, and frankly, I just think he needs more reps standing in the middle of the ring, doing this kind of promo. I feel like he had more confidence and more spring in his step on NWA, the studio show, than he's showing now on NWA Power. I think there was more confidence. I think there's something that just isn't quite smoothed out with him right now. And I think if they put him on TV every week and he gets a sense of, am I a heel? Am I a face? What's my character? And what's my material? I think he'll get better. But this at times was a little shaky. But like I said, overall, a thumbs up. I'll put it this way. I wouldn't show that promo to someone to say, see, this is why Ricky Stark should be built around. This would not be my segment that I would say is him at his best. But if someone happened to watch it, I don't think they'd walk away going, why are they pushing this guy either? Your thoughts?
Yeah, 100% agree. I think the one thing that came into my mind when he got the mic was, wow, finally this guy has the mic. You know, this is something that we saw really nicely when he was feuding with MJF. They had a nice match. I don't know which Dynamite that was, but they had a really nice world title match. And around that time, he had some more speaking ability in the ring. So we haven't really seen that much from him lately. So I think you're right. There were some drawbacks, and this would not be the promo to show anyone to kind of showcase Ricky Starks. But they didn't bother me as much tonight, to be fair. I was just more happy that he was given the platform to begin with.
All right, new email. Luke from the UK says, hey, wait, I just watched Collision, and it seems we might be seeing the first cracks in this CM Punk return. Were the comments about him never missing a show a very public Hangman-esque shot at Jay White, who has missed tonight's show and was replaced by a cardboard cutout? By the way, do they just carry around cardboard cutouts to Jay White just in case he doesn't show up?
I don't know, but I love to think that that's the case. Yeah.
Isn't that just a truck full of cardboard cutouts of everybody? And if someone no-shows, at least they'll have a cardboard cutout.
That would be great, yeah.
I did. I cracked up every time that I saw Jay White, like the cutout, just in that frozen enthusiasm.
Yeah.
By the way, because I'll forget to say it if I don't say it now, I loved when Starks came out. And he goes, all right, I'm going to go back again, and I want the director to start my music, and I want you all to forget that you saw me. One, I love that because it's like it's so dumb when the music plays and it's supposed to be a run-in. So that worked. But then when he came out, I love Nigel McGuinness. Oh, my God, is that Ricky Starks? And then Ian played into it. I laughed out loud. I thought that was so well.
Nigel was on tonight. He even went in the ladder match when the key was thrown at the crowd. Did you see him stand up in the background and yell to the crowd and throw it back?
No,
He was very into the show. Real quick, that Starks thing you called out, my 5-year-old son also thought that was pretty cool. He's like, "What? Wait, why is he coming out again?" And I had to explain to him. So, but it was good. It was good.
I love it. That's great. Okay, so also he seemed very annoyed about the lack of Wembley hype. What are your thoughts? He certainly didn't look as happy as usual, and I'm worried the honeymoon period might be over already. Thanks again for everything you do and for future reference. What is the call-in number? Are you joking? Don't I say it enough? 347-215-8558, just in case he's not joking. I mean, if he was being critical of Tony Khan, one, talking about the travel nightmares, it's possible he just had it. Just the Canada stuff I heard was not pleasant for a lot of people. Other people, it was fine. It's just, I think it depended on, where you're flying in from or, how close you cut it, how close you were cutting your schedule. But, I did hear that was a bit of an issue, but it felt like, what is this about? And why are we talking about it live on national TV? And who are you referencing or throwing under the bus? And now we have to speculate. And then, we already talked about the Wembley stuff, but why bring it up? Why throw your boss or your company under the bus? And, just because you're frustrated doesn't mean it needs to be expressed in that forum. So there was a little bit of the press conference aspect to this, and Luke was thinking along those lines, Patrick.
Yeah, I have that in quotes. He says, I show up and make my towns. Like, you don't just randomly say that without alluding to somebody. I don't know who it could be. I don't know. I'm not even going to suggest. I don't even know who it would be. But it's just so random and weird that it feels like it has to be about somebody, right? But it just goes along the lines. We talked about it, Luke. You just said the emailer, Luke, said the same thing we did earlier as far. This is definitely that Punk that we saw in September. So, at least it felt that way at times. Very strange.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's a one-off and not, him unraveling, starting to unravel in front of us. All right, Azan from St. Louis says, good evening, Wade and Patrick. One, why do you think Tony Khan has been using so many Lucha guys lately? It seems like it's budding into something to me. This seemed like more than you. I guess it does feel like more than usual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gravity and, yeah. And Lucha Brothers back in the mix. Yeah, go ahead.
Commander. Certainly the Kingo Commander's there. Yeah, Lucha yeah. Brothers. Bandido when he's healthy.
Yeah.
I've always been into that. And maybe it was the Nitro era that we talked briefly about earlier. Just that different vibe and feel. I'm not a Lucha fan to watch a Lucha company necessarily, but Lucha wrestlers in this style of wrestling, that mix, I really like it. So I'm all for it. I would love to see more character development. I think just throwing somebody out there, you know, seeing Gravity at the Ring of Honor show that I went to, and now he's been popping up here and there on AEW shows is great, but, you know, can we get to the next level? Commander's another one. I'm not huge on Commander as far as, you know, where he is in his ability just yet, but give me something more than just putting him in matches to give me some flashy, you know, matches here and there. That's what I'm looking for. I think they've done a pretty good job, maybe not as recently. They've done a pretty good job with the Lucha Brothers since, you know, the promotion started. Them aside, I'm not sure we've seen much from the other luchadors, unless there's somebody I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I think the problem with luchadors is when you bring them in because they can do dazzling moves, but you treat them rather interchangeably as people.
Yes.
You know, they're human beings, and yes, they're in masks, and that can work for you if you're the one of only one or two wrestlers in the company wearing masks. But if a bunch of luchadors are all wearing masks, you don't have any sense of who they are because you have to do heavy lifting to create characters for someone where you can't see their facial expressions. And AEW isn't good at that. So, you know, that's just not their forte. That's not Tony Khan's strength. So, yeah, I mean, you introduce all these masks, and, you know, the announcer can go, oh, he's different than Bandido, and they took these different paths. It's like, okay, I mean, now the announcers are doing the heavy lifting, but it's still not enough. And, you know, there are people who are going to love, you know, oh, Luchador, I'm going to be into this match. But that's really limited. And there's a cap on how valuable that TV time spent is unless people connect with the wrestler beyond, oh, he's smooth and dazzling and does these fancy moves. Fans have to identify with them and differentiate them from other wrestlers. And that's just not there. You know, it's not consistent. Mm-hmm. All right, number 2, what do you think about Mercedes Martinez and AEW in general? I'd say it's weird. She's been in WWE and AEW for both a good amount of time, but the only thing she's done of note is main event Dynamite as ROH Women's Champion. I, you know, there's people excited to see Mercedes Martinez come in, and they, you know, told a nice story at the beginning with her. I just don't think she's been really impressive. I don't think she stood out as bad, but, I mean, there's a couple matches where I was like, this wasn't good. You know, it just, her timing wasn't there, her cardio wasn't there. I don't know what it was, but I mean, she's fine, but I haven't been blown away by her yet in anything that I can recall. Patrick, how about you?
Yeah. I tend to agree. I don't want to compare her to anyone else, but I'm about to. I would actually prefer someone like Marina Shafir get featured. I think they're kind of similar, as far as style goes, but back to Mercedes, but I don't think there's really not much that I've seen from her that jumps out to me. She probably would be better suited maybe for the Ring of Honor brand at this point, just more consistently, unless you're going to do something with her more, you know, definitively on AEW. But I think, you know, we've seen something tonight just to get her a win for Chris Statlander. It looks like next week's Collision. So that's more than likely just building her up for 1 week to get that loss. So I'm not, that's certainly not bringing her to the next step in any way.
Yeah. All right, and then third, he says, what do you think about the team of Brian Cage and Big Bill getting a title shot next week? I think putting those two guys as a team was a genius and money move. I wasn't seeing that twist coming at the end, I thought. Brian Cage just seems like he's being perpetually punished. I just don't think there's value in having somebody who looks like he should be a huge star going on TV, putting in competitive matches, showing off that he can do things big guys can't normally do, and then losing. Like, I just either keep him on your roster and get something out of him meaningful by protecting him so that when somebody beats him, it counts for something, or don't use him. Like, I've not been a fan of how Brian Cage is being used. And I'm not saying don't cut him. You know, I'm not saying cut him. I'm just saying either cut him or use him better. But having this gigantic, muscular guy who just, you know, kind of jumps off the screen in a lot of ways And he's just there to do some cool moves and be competitive and lose. So that's weird. And then Big Bill, awful name, and I would say even worse character development. They've done nothing to let us know who he is, like what his deal is. And it feels like he's showing more as cast in the past. So, like, I get sort of flabbergasted with sometimes, like, well, he's a guy who people will recognize. We'll give him a new name, the worst name possible. And then we're going to just throw him on TV, and he's just going to, you know, yell and be red-faced and intense. But we're never going to tell you – you're not going to really hear from him other than some generic little soundbite. And he's just a body taking up space. Like, that happened a lot on Nitro and Thunder. And it never happens in WWE. You know, where just somebody is there, but there's just – you've no effort's been put into like framing who they are and giving them like a mission. And yeah. And so I just think Big Bill is like an example of one of Tony Khan's biggest weaknesses, booking. Oh, there's a guy with some value. We'll use him intermittently and we'll do nothing to invest people in him. So Cage and Bill being a team, I don't know if it's a genius and money move. It might work, but it isn't a thing to me other than they're getting a title shot. Patrick, you're done.
It works for my five-year-old because they're so big, so he likes that. But other than that, it doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, this is where, and I promise, I'm not even a big Ring of Honor watcher, but this is where Ring of Honor could suit the amount of people you have under contract. Put these guys. I know Brian Cage is a six-man champion there. Fine, but to your point, every time he's on AEW, he's set up to fail and lose. I don't watch Ring of Honor. I don't subscribe to that streaming channel, but I know he's dominant on that show, but who would know?
Yep.
Big Bill's another guy. Put him there, add some depth, add some layers. You can tell stories with those guys on that promotion, which we won't go down that road, but big question mark as to what the point of that, that decision, outside of the library, of course, what the purchase of that really means, if there's really no direction there. But these are two examples of giving somebody direction and actually giving them some depth. And then, building them up ideally to bring them to the quote-unquote main roster, either on Collision or Dynamite. So I think that's where I could see some use out of these guys to at least, do something with them and show their value and build their value over time.
Yeah, there's something that's just making a big splash and being the centerpiece of attention when you show up, and then as opposed to just showing up now and then, and there's no character development, and there's this other world that they assume knowledge on that only a tiny slice have knowledge of. It's just, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, a few other things to hit on. Ladder match, what'd you think of the ladder match, and the big powerbomb spot off the ladder onto another ladder, and yeah, just in general. And now I don't know, is Buddy Matthews actually like, is his shoulder popping out all the time, or is this just a thing he does?
I was wondering the same. I don't know if it was a callback to their first match a few weeks back, and it wasn't
dumb. I didn't like
I agree.
People are trying to hurt each other all the time. And if you get it, there's certain injuries you can have where the match continues, but then there's other injuries you can have where it's like, we better stop. Like, I don't get it. Oh, MJF hurt his ankle. So we stopped the match?
Right.
Why? Like, you're trying to hurt people's ankles. You're stomping. You're kicking them in the nuts. You're putting figure eights on them and trying to snap their ankle. You're doing ankle locks. You're doing all this stuff to hurt people. But it's like when people clear the announce desk and it's like, well, I want to hurt my opponent, but not too badly, so I'm going to remove the monitors. Like, your goal in wrestling is to hurt your opponent. But if he really gets hurt in a certain way, we just stop the match. I don't get the logic. I didn't have a problem with the shoulder popping out and him jumping to ringside and telling the doc to pop it back in. I mean, I guess that's fine, whether it's legit or not. But this notion that in a match there's real injuries and then there's all the other ones we pretend. Like, you're drawing attention to the fact that the rest are pretend and not a big deal. Yeah. If when you play up that real ones are, like, completely different. I don't know. It's just... I don't like when they go there. I think it takes away from the rest of the show.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it was a weird way to go to commercial break, too, when he was going out to the doctor. As for the match, I liked it. I thought it was good. It wasn't my it wasn't a top 10 ladder match. I prefer one-on-one ladder matches. I feel like we always get multi-man or multi-person ladder matches these days. So it was nice to kind of see a one-on-one match here. And, it, you know, aside from the Julia Hart presence, there really wasn't interference, which I was kind of surprised because I thought, you know, this could build to maybe a six-man in some way, especially with Roosh being re-signed. So I was kind of surprised by that, but, you know, in a good way, I guess. I audibly gasped a few times. I don't do that usually when watching, but those two ladder, you know, moves, the spear, I think, through the ropes onto the ladder, then, of course, the sunset flip powerbomb, I just assumed those were supposed to break, and they didn't, because we're, you know, we're used to that happening and being rigged to snap in half. So pretty alarming to see that stuff, just to, you know, no give whatsoever on them. So, you know, kudos to them, and hopefully everyone's okay. But other than that, I thought it was a good match. I mean, this is an example of featuring guys that have not really been featured to date in this company in a nice way. Andrade's really come on strong since returning. I liked his new ring gear here. He looks more like a star in this regard instead of the pinstripes. I don't think that worked for him. I have a note here, just a nice touch with Matthews actually wearing the mask to the ring, just a nice kind of rub it in there as a heel. But yeah, it was good. I liked it. I think we talked about a few other things already with Nigel standing up and telling the crowd to throw it back. I think the silliest thing here was Julia Hart, you know, taunting Andrade with the key and then 2 seconds later dropping it right in front of him rather. And it was just kind of a silly thing to see, but no, it was a good match. I guess the other drawback here, I just felt like at times, at least as a TV viewer, they were really, this is ladder matches in general, but they were just moving furniture a lot more than anything. But other than that, it was a good one.
Colton and Austin Gunn and Juice against Darius Vikingo and Andretti. It just was a match thrown on there. Right team won. How are you feeling about the Guns?
I like them ever since they changed their gear, and this is, I know that sounds like a silly thing to say. I think that was a turning point for them, just visually the presence that they bring to the ring. Of course, the attitude, they, you know, at least I think it's Austin, the one that's really more of the talker of the two. I like them. I don't like this whole Bang Bang Gang moniker. I think that's so ridiculous. It doesn't really fit for me, but pairing them with Juice and Jay White has been solid. I think it was the right move. So generally speaking, I'm not necessarily a fan of them in general, but I think they've certainly come on strong in the last, you know, year or maybe even a year and a half.
Austin does a great job coming right to the brink of doing cartoon bumps like Shawn Michaels to Hulk Hogan, but not crossing the line. And he knows where that line is, and he sells stuff. He does so comedically but believably and not drawing too much attention to himself. And there was an example of that in this match too. And I just think Colton is coming along. He just does all the little things well. I mean, he just bumps hard. He hits the ropes hard. He does stuff good in between moves. Like, it's just, he's crisp. And he's someone to watch. Like, I just think he's going to sneak up on people. I don't think Austin has the upside that Colton does right now. I think Austin can be really entertaining and valuable. But I think Colton has a higher ceiling than most are thinking right now, which is, he's got a late start. He's really mature in that sense compared to other people. You kind of got to move on him if you're going to. And it does seem like with the gear change and putting them with Jay and Juice, you know, there might be something. They might be, you know, Tony Khan might be thinking the same thing, that maybe there's something here that at first, you know, they were just, you know, the sons of Billy Gunn and benefiting from, you know, being family members and that, you know, can be used against somebody. But you can also overcome it. And
I don't know, Wade. I mean, he also has that stature of Wayne Bloom. So there's that as well.
Yes, I could see. Yeah. Let's 20 years. We'll see what people say.
We'll see. But one thing I would act like, actually like that. I used to cover, as you know, but I used to cover for the Torch AW Dark and Dark Elevation for the time. And they were all over that show for a while. So it's actually fun to think back a true tandem, team in this case, coming really from scratch, building something from scratch. There are examples of that in AEW, and they're one of them. So that is a kind of a cool thing to think about. And to your point, you know, where they go from here in 10 years and beyond, yeah, there's a lot of potential, I think. And I don't know if many people talk about, I mean, I don't think a lot of people were talking about them even now. I mean, they didn't come up with the colors, for example, but just a small microcosm of that. But yeah, people maybe still kind of, you know, they're a little bit under the radar still, I think. But I think that they've grown in the last, you know, like I said, year and a half.
Yeah. And I when they were on Dark, I was like, these guys are better. They're not just Nepo kids. Like they're working harder maybe than others who to prove, you know, that they're not just a subject, that they're not just a product of nepotism. And I've, you know, going back to AW Dark, I thought these guys are better. They're not just the punchline joke that people treated them as. And I just thought that was another good example. All right. So we're running really long. Patrick, is there anything else you want to add that maybe is in your notes or on your mind before we sign off here?
You know, the only thing that we didn't talk about in a super, super quick segment was this Miro backstage interview.
Yeah.
You know, you finally think something's going to happen here, and I really want to be behind this guy, and I am. But, you know, he can't even get through an interview like most people in this company, and of all people to jump him, it's Aaron Solo. I mean, that does not – I mean, you would think maybe Powerhouse Hobbs would be, you know, quickly behind him maybe.
Whatever
help
happened
out
to him
with the B-Town, but no, it was just Aaron Solo. And
pretty whatever happened to Powerhouse Hobbs? It's supposed to be his brand.
That's right. That's right, yeah. And just so not much else to say there, just a head-scratcher for me. And to actually have Miro there for that to be the case, I'd rather just see another video package with him if I feel guilty
because I had said Miro has to exist. This is a hotline or audio, you know, podcast last week. Like, I want Miro to exist somewhere other than this zone of vignettes,
right.
You know, somebody, and now they give him that, and yeah, it's being attacked by Aaron Solo, and he doesn't get to talk. I mean, I'm glad to know he exists beyond sending in videos, like, and then showing up to wrestle a squash match now and then. But yeah, this isn't exactly what I had in mind. But you know, if they're not quite ready to establish what his view's going to be, I mean, I guess now we have a new reason to have a squash match, basically.
Right. At least there's something. I can appreciate something versus nothing, but, you know, it just fell flat with me.
Yeah. Well, cool. So, Patrick, just tell people more about your thoughts on Rampage and the Collision era. How is it holding up?
You know, it's settled into a nice little, I don't know, niche is the word, but it's settled in. I think it is what it is, and most people that do watch it get what they expect out of it. It's not pretending to be the A show that it once tried to be early on. So I mean, it's a solid hour of pro wrestling. I watch it every week, so I am proof that there are people watching, and you know, it's enjoyable. It's an easy watch. The fact that it's taped makes it move, you know, like the caller said, many callers said today, it moves fast. It moves, you know, quite fast. It's just, you know, the time slot and, you know, just where it is on a Friday night, it makes it tough. But it's a solid show, and you'll see some good action on it. There's definitely a squash of the week each week, but other than that, you get a pretty good kickoff and a nice main event. I think if you just know what it's supposed to be and are okay with that, you'll enjoy it. Don't overthink it.
Well, check out Patrick's reports at pwtorch.com covering Rampage. Patrick, it's been great, and hopefully we'll do this, you know, sometime within the next year or even month.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Wade. I appreciate it.
Great. Yep. Thanks for our on-site correspondence. I know a couple of you are still listening, and I appreciate it. And we will talk to y'all Monday night after Raw, and sooner on the VIP side of things, I suspect.